Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Brian Noonan in for Justin Kaufman on 720 WGN. Happy Halloween. Hope it has been fun for you, a little spooky, because that's what Halloween is all about, and that's what leads us to our next guest on the program. Greg Newkirk is a paranormal investigator. He is also the director of the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and the Occult, and he joins us now on 720 WGN. Greg, happy Halloween. Thanks for taking some time tonight.
Happy Halloween, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So I'm looking at your bio. I'm reading up on you, and I'm thinking, boy, this guy is, for 20 years, you've been tracking down, you've been looking at the occult, you've been tracking spirits. I have to ask you about something. You dealt with mind-dwelling extraterrestrial goblins. What was it? I read that, and I went, wait a minute, this has got to be some comic book. This can't be real.
I realize it's hard to grasp, it's hard to swallow at first, but there was a case back in the 1950s, happened out in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, where this family was besieged by these strange creatures that they called goblins. And they believed that these things had come from outer space. There was actually a UFO sighting that happened just moments before they were besieged by these creatures. And it's actually one of the most well-documented cases of extraterrestrial contact. Police officers saw it. Tons of people saw it. It was witnessed by 11 people. And what's strange is this case has actually led into another case that we've been working on for the past year or two that's happened on the other side of Kentucky. And it seems like these things are coming out of mine shafts. They're terrorizing people, looking in kids' windows at night. And people all along the Appalachian Mountains have seen these things.
Now, and Greg, I'm sure I'm not the first person to ask you that. How do you explain to people that this is, you know, most of us would think, well, that's crazy. That can't possibly happen. There's no goblins coming out of a mine shaft. I hear that's happening in Kentucky. I think it's just some, you know, some hillbillies wandering around with a little moonshine in them.
It could be. They'd have to be very small, three-toed hillbillies.
Well, listen.
It is Kentucky. I know.
You never know what's going to happen down there.
But there's these things. These things happen all over the place, and all you have to do is pay attention. And, you know, the town that we've been investigating, they've said that these people won't take them seriously because the claims are so crazy. And yet, you know, the entire town has seen a UFO the size of a football field hover over their town. They have no cell phone service there. There's only one gas station. There's only one grocery store. And no one will take them seriously. But as soon as they saw this UFO and started talking about it, they told us that government men came to town and told them that what they saw was a satellite. And then the next day, what was printed in the newspaper was something that none of them had seen. It was a completely different thing. So there's something strange going on there. It's just a matter of taking these people seriously and listening to what they have to say.
Now, you've been doing this a long time. How did you become, in your own words, a professional weirdo? You're a monster hunter. You write for travel for road trippers. You do all sorts of things. What led you to this life?
I think too much X-Files and Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
See, TV will rot your mind or set you on a path, an unusual career path.
It's the health benefits are not great, but the freedom to chase monsters and say that that's your job is pretty awesome.
That would be great on a business card. I envy you that. I think that's a terrific business card. So, and I'm not poo-pooing this, but I'm a little skeptical. And because sure. My wife wanted to go to a haunted cemetery yesterday. Well, I went because, you know, she asked, but there's a part of me that's like, nothing's going to happen. And then you're telling this story about this town in Kentucky where they don't have cell service and it's a tiny little town. And I wonder, well, why do these things happen there? Why aren't we seeing that, you know, in bigger cities? You know, are the aliens afraid of all the lights? What causes the monsters to stay away from big cities and only go to these little towns in Kentucky or somewhere else where there's not too many folks?
This stuff happens in cities all the time, but because of you know, the dense population, all of the noise pollution, you don't you don't hear about it as much, and it seems like you don't see it as much. I mean, there's cases where people have been, you know, abducted by aliens out of their beds in New York City. And no one knows about this because you just imagine, oh, it's a city. There's tons of people there. But when it happens to a small community in the middle of nowhere, you know, that gets more attention because the communities are more tight-knit. You know, for places where there's tons of people living, cities aren't quite as connected.
Now, you mentioned alien abduction, and part of what you do, too, is you try to recreate things like alien abductions. How, when you talk to people who claim to have been abducted by aliens, can you tell if somebody's being genuine or if they're just, you know, nuts? And then how do you go about trying to reenact this or put this all together?
I think that it after you've done it long enough, you can tell who's being sincere about it. And sometimes even people who are being sincere, you know, they might not have experienced what we might think of as an alien abduction. They might have been covering up a traumatic event in, you know, earlier in their lives. So it becomes a process of having to weed out the people who, you know, strange things have actually happened to. And, you know, when we go to recreate something like this, I think the best way to do that is to hook up with somebody who we genuinely believe that they believe the story they're telling us. We met a guy not too long ago who was the head of Michigan MUFON, and he took us out to the site of his abduction experience that he hadn't been back to since he was a kid. And he, as he was going through it, the strange thing was that a storm had started to roll in on us. And I thought, oh, crap, we're going to have to move all of our electrical equipment and our cameras because we're going to get rained on. Except it was already raining all around us. And when we realized that there was this giant space above us where it wasn't raining, we looked at this guy, and he said, no, it's because they're here. They can tell that we're here. And they've been following me my entire life. So hanging out with people like that, hanging out with people that you normally would be afraid to hang out to, maybe, is the best way to have an experience like that. I mean, you have to be open-minded to it,
sure,
too, but these people are lightning rods to this type of thing.
Now, were you always a believer, or was there one specific event or story that made you say, wow, I have to investigate this more and more because I believe this is really happening?
You know, my experience with this started as a joke. It was, you know, my friends and I had a sleepover when we were like 12 years old going to the cemetery to scare each other. And after weird things started happening that we weren't planning on actually happening, we thought, oh, my goodness, there's something to these. And I think it's natural. I've swung kind of back and forth from the believer to the skeptic. And I think now I'm somewhere in the middle. I don't believe every story that's been told to me, but I've seen some strange things. I've seen a book fly through the air unprovoked, and I've seen a full-body apparition once. And
really?
Two things were enough to make me believe, yeah.
And where was that with the full-body apparition?
It was at a mining cemetery way up in the mountains of northeastern Pennsylvania. And I'd taken my sister and a couple of her friends up there because I'd never taken them ghost hunting, and I'd been doing it in, you know, 10 years at this point. And I saw this man standing in the back of the cemetery, and he didn't look out of time. He didn't look out of place. He just looked like this guy. And it didn't strike me that it would be weird that, 1:30 in the morning, there would be this man standing there in the middle of the cemetery on one road. It's a logging road in the middle of the mountains, nothing around for miles. And I thought, oh, man, we're going to get in trouble. I should say something to him so we don't scare him. And I called out to him, and he turned, he looked at me, made eye contact, and then he walked into the forest and disappeared.
Whoa.
And there's nothing up there. And the craziest thing is, this actually just happened about 6 months ago. I finally tracked down information on a man who had been killed up there. His body had been dumped at this cemetery. And this guy was the spitting image of the man who was killed.
Whoa. All right,
yeah.
That's a little creepy. I'll give you that. Greg Newkirk is my guest. He's a paranormal investigator and the director of the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and the Occult, which I want to talk to you about in just a minute. If you can hang on for 1 second, Greg, we'll talk all about the museum when we come back. Greg Newkirk is my guest. You can find out more about him at paramuseum.com or on Twitter. It's Newkirk, N-E-U-K-E-R-K, or WeirdHQ at Twitter. Paramuseum.com. More with Greg on the other side. It's 720 WGN. It is Halloween. Brian Noonan in for Justin Kaufman on 720 WGN. And we're getting a little spooky with Greg Newkirk. He is a paranormal investigator. He is also the director of the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and the Occult. You can go to paramuseum.com to get all the information on that. Greg, thanks again for being here. Now, let's get into the museum. What exactly is the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and the Occult? It sounds very creepy.
The museum is very creepy. It's the world's only mobile museum filled with haunted objects that people can touch, see, and test for themselves if they sign the waiver.
All right. So I saw that on the website. You have to sign a waiver. What is the waiver? What are we giving up when we sign the waiver?
Basically that you won't hold us responsible if a ghost follows you home.
Now, have you had anyone come back to you and say, listen, I was at the museum, it was fascinating, and I held an object, and now weird things are happening at my house?
All the time.
Really?
All the time. The most common one, we have an idol that we call the Idol of Nightmares, and it tends to give people some pretty frightening experiences when they fall asleep. And they usually only tend to last about a week or so at the longest. So we tell people to just hold tight if they've held the idol.
Now, I'm looking at some of the and I see the picture of the Idol of Nightmares, and it looks kind of scary. How does an object become haunted? Because, and we'll get into some of the specific items you have there, but in general, does a spirit invade this item? Is that what happens? How does that, how does it become haunted?
Well, of course, it's hard to know for sure, and this is all speculation, sure. But, you know, over the last, 20 years and longer, done by some of our counterparts, we've come to find that there's a few different ways that things can become haunted. One of them is that someone dies and there's an object that they've loved very much, and sometimes they will use this object to try and send messages to loved ones. Sometimes this object can be involved in a really traumatic event, and these types of hauntings are generally what we consider like a dumb haunting, where they're not intelligent, they just sort of play over and over again. Some of them are used in magic rituals, curses and spells, and they are imbued with some kind of an energy. Sometimes that's intelligent, sometimes it's not. And then the one that you don't hear much about is sometimes objects become haunted because people put so much intention in them. They believe that an object is haunted, and because they believe it, they're actually the trigger for the haunting. So we get a lot of objects all the time that are just kind of like a creepy porcelain clown, but they never do anything for us when they've done things for somebody else because they're actually behind the haunting themselves.
Now, can something that someone considers a good luck charm, is that considered haunted as well, just on a different level?
A good friend of ours actually has a bell. He's a fellow paranormal investigator. He has a bell that his grandmother used to use to ring people to dinner. And he believed that because there was so much goodness imbued in this bell that he takes it with him on tough cases. And it actually helps as kind of a good luck charm and a banishing to banish spirits that might not have the best intentions.
Huh. Now, when someone comes to you and says, listen, Greg, I've got an item and I think it's haunted. How do you go about deciding if in fact it's worthy of being included in the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and the Occult?
Well, we generally travel around with just a few of the best objects, and we see a lot of the same people, so we swap things out a lot. There's a lot of stuff in our collection that has never seen the public, I'm pretty confident in saying that about 95% of the stuff that we're given never lives up to the crazy reputations that it has.
Okay.
But through testing, we have a live webcam that we put things on, and people can view this. They can see new items. And they can help us test these things. And if they appear to show something strange is going on, or if they have a really good story, those are better candidates for making the Traveling Museum.
Some things I look at, and a lot of people are like this, they just automatically go, oh, that's creepy. And one of those is dolls. I am not a fan of dolls. And you have, in the museum, one of the artifacts is Ruby the Haunted Doll. And just by looking at her face, I wouldn't want her around the house. But what's her deal?
Ruby is actually kind of our ambassador for haunted objects because they have this stigma that they're all out to steal your soul. They're all evil things. And
yes.
Ruby is actually, she does look very creepy. She's been through a lot. She's pretty old. But she has a strange effect on people. When they hold her, they sometimes break down into tears. And we'll watch people hold her, and they'll 15 minutes later, they are burping her, they're patting her, they're rocking her, and they don't realize that they're doing it. And we've seen this happen to hundreds of people now. And I think that it's because, you know, the family that gave us Ruby, the story was that she had a little girl that owned her had died with Ruby in her arms.
Oh.
And she died very young. And the kind of uncomfortable thing that this family had trouble telling us was they believed that this little girl was still attached to Ruby. But when you have an item like that, that's been in your family for a long time, you have no connection to the person who you believe might be haunting it, you still don't want to give it away or sell it, so what do you do with it? And they knew that we would give her a good home, so we ended up with her.
Wow. And we only have a minute or so left, but I've been spending a lot more time in New Orleans, where voodoo and magic and all that, that's a big thing down there. And another artifact that you have is a cursed voodoo nail.
Yeah, it was actually used in one of the oldest artifacts that you can use in magic spells is a coffin nail. And they would be pulled out of coffins from people who died in particular fashions. And you could actually use that nail to try and curse them in the same exact way. This one was pulled from the nail of a man who'd burned alive. And lots of people, hasn't happened to me, but lots of people have held this thing and actually had it heat up in their hands to the point where they had to drop it and have had welts.
Wow. All right. Now, this is great. So people need to go to paramuseum.com and read all about the museum and find out where they can go see it. You travel all year round, correct? It's not just a Halloween kind of thing. People can see all year.
Every month there's dates on there. People can come see us. We're generally close to most major cities throughout the year.
So go there, paramuseum.com, find everything out. Newkirk, N-U-E-K-E-R-K at Twitter. Or Weird HQ. Greg, it's been very interesting talking to you. Congratulations on the museum. Keep up the good work, and happy haunting.
Happy Halloween. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Greg. Bye-bye. Again, paramuseum.com. That's Greg Newkirk. He is the director of the Traveling Museum of Paranormal and the Occult.